weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.
And I'm Steve Nesbitt, head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. With 8 inches of snow on Saturday in Champaign, last weekend's Illini game against Northwestern, despite being very photogenic, is officially the snowiest game in Gies Memorial Stadium history.
To talk more about this game and other football games played in extreme weather conditions, we are joined by Illinois State climatologist and avid football fan, Trent Ford. Trent, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Maddie and Steve, and go Bears.
So, as to your point, Trent, before we get into the meteorology, I have to know what teams you guys both pull for each fall. Let's start with you, Steve.
So I grew up in the 5 western counties of western New York, which mean that you are automatically Bills Mafia.
Let's go, Buffalo!
Perfect. And then you're Bears all the way, Trent?
Yeah. I had no choice. I grew up in the Peoria area, and I was all my family were Bears fans.
Home to a certain team, which come January will run roughshod over the competition in Super Bowl 26, a team that is known as the Bears.
The Bears.
And I've subjected my son to that as well, so it's unfortunate for him. But yes.
Similar to me, I grew up in Michigan, so Lions is the only choice.
Yeah.
So down the field and gain a Lions victory.
A lot of winning in this room right now.
Exactly. Yeah. We're doing great. So back to that Illini season closer. Trent, what kind of conditions were these players and fans experiencing during the game?
Yeah, Steve mentioned that it was the snowiest in Memorial Stadium history, which goes back to the 1920s, which is really something. But the reason being is that, the college football season, even now that it's been extended in recent decades, still typically ends in November, the regular season, or at least maybe the last few days of December or the first few days of December. So it's pretty rare that here in Champaign we get significant snowfall that early in the winter season. But that's exactly what we had. That Saturday, we had a pretty strong winter storm system move through the Midwest. And the big question was the timing of the snow and how quickly it'll accumulate or not. And we were sort of, as is almost always the case, we're sort of on the line here in Champaign of we may get some heavier snow, but it's going to be pretty wet. Then we'll get some what we call mixing of rain in, which means it's going to fall as a mixture of snow and rain. The rain tends to melt the snow when it falls, so we don't get a lot of accumulation, but it's wet and messy and cold. And actually what ended up happening is that we had pretty significant accumulation from right around noon to right before the game kicked off, where we were seeing, accumulation up to 4 to 5 inches of snow before the game kicked off. And then the rain actually didn't mix in until halfway through the game or so. So for the first half of the game, it was pretty, again, significant snow accumulation. And during that time, the first half, there were time periods when we were getting, on average, like a potentially an inch per hour. Now it didn't snow an inch in an hour, but that was the snowfall rates. And then for the second half, the rain did end up mixing in. It kind of lessened a little bit, but then people were subjected to a 33-degree rainfall. So it was pretty miserable. And the wind was fairly strong too, as because the low pressure system drove those pretty high winds. So wind chill values were well into the low 20s, if not high teens. People were getting snowed on, rained on. It was a very messy time in Memorial Stadium, but like Steven mentioned, the snowiest game on record. Officially, Champaign-Urbana got 5 inches of snow that day, although at the water survey, we weren't able to make a measurement until 8 a.m. the next day, so it compacted. It's very likely that part of the city picked up 6 to 7 inches over that time period. So, and I heard a lot of stories from folks about people who were driving down from Chicago, were, having, it took 4 hours or more to get to Champaign from the Chicagoland area because of how slow things were in 57. And so, yeah, not an ideal situation, but snow games are a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, interestingly, it caused the officials to actually close the eastern stands of the stadium because they weren't able to clear the snow out. It, you know, requires an army of volunteers to actually clear the stands out so it's safe to go up the stairs and actually find a place to sit. And they made a decision. They weren't even going to open the eastern stands, and everybody was kind of under the press boxes all huddled together. So maybe it was a little warmer, but yeah, it was disruptive.
Yeah, it seems like folks there had fun. They were making, you know, snowmen in the end zone. So the folks who did brave it, and I know Andrew, we talked to him yesterday, had a great time. So, yeah, so Steve, based on the weather forecast, how much advance notice did the team have of these conditions?
Yeah, so this was an interesting event. Actually, going back about a week, there were signals that what we famously call the polar vortex, which is the circulation of winds around the pole and a stable jet stream pattern that usually sets up, was starting to get disrupted. This happened, if you all remember, the winter of 2013-2014, when right after the holidays, we had this big plunge of cold air that came into the Midwest, and I believe we had a plus 6-inch plus snowstorm that happened right after Christmas that year. This pattern actually happened where the polar vortex started to get disrupted. And at that point, we didn't know where the impacts were going to be, but people started to say, hey, this is a signal for maybe some extreme storms. Lo and behold, a cyclone in the 5+ day model forecasts started to show up that was going to go up the Ohio Valley. And of course, one of the big questions here in Champaign is, where is that low going to track? If it tracks over us, that usually means we get a beautiful 33-degree rain storm in the winter, which we're famous for here in the Midwest, in central Illinois. But the models, some of them started to show it tracking south of us, which is sort of right where you want to see those lows track here for Champaign snow. And a couple of days out, they locked in. And now, you know, thanks to AI, we have lots of models that get run every day. And they were sort of locking in on this pattern like 2 to 3 days out that we were going to get a big one. And the accumulation maps actually started to show even more than we actually got, which is common. But then by the day before, we were pretty confident that we were going to get at least 3 inches, if not 5 inches. And we actually overperformed a little bit, I think, based on the models, which was good for snow lovers.
So the team would have had an idea that it was going to be a really cold game, but until, you know, a day before, they don't really know how much snow they're going to be dealing with.
Correct, yeah. Certainly the fans probably would have looked at the weather app and said, uh-oh, this is going to be bad probably 2 days out. But and the team obviously has some decisions to make about, you know, their equipment and how they dress. I think they would have had a good warning about this one. Mm-hmm. So let's switch gears to the NFL. And there's been plenty of examples over the years of extreme weather impacting the outcomes of games, where Southern teams have to travel north near the end of the season, and they're certainly impacted in terms of how they play offense and defense, and it really can impact the game. And probably one of the most extreme examples that I remember, you know, hearing about as a kid was going back to what's now been called the Ice Bowl of 1967.
And the question now is, can the Dallas Cowboys overcome this very, very cold weather? The Packers, well, we hope that they're used to it.
This was the NFL championship game before the AFC and the NFC came together. And two classic franchises, the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys, met up in Lambeau Field back on December 31st, 1967. And you don't have to guess here, northern Wisconsin, extreme cold. And this game, you know, I mean, if you look at the old film footage, you just see clouds of water vapor coming out of the stands because it's just so cold. And a lot of that probably froze almost immediately. The temperature at game time registered a frigid 13 degrees below zero. So unimaginable to be outside, especially in the stands, standing there watching this game. And according to NFL Communications, the wind chill at the kickoff was minus 48 degrees. So it doesn't take much to look at your wind chill chart and understand that those are really dangerous conditions in terms of exposure. And I looked this up, and actually one person actually died in the stands, an elderly person, due to the exposure. So this is pretty extreme.
So kind of despite these conditions, more than 50,000 fans packed into the stadium that New Year's Eve and watch as the Packers claim their third consecutive NFL title with a 21-17 victory.
And the Green Bay Packers are out in front of the Dallas Cowboys 21-17, 13 seconds showing on the clock, and the Green Bay Packers will be third-time National Football League champions on a 12 below zero day here at Lambeau Field in Green Bay.
And Trent, so what sort of conditions, what sort of, you know, broad scale conditions would have caused temperatures to get this low during the Ice Bowl?
Yeah, you know, in 1967, we didn't have as many of the upper air observations. Certainly there weren't the satellite observations, even the radar. And so, but the National Weather Service and the military did create surface weather maps every single day. And those actually go back well into the 19th century. And they give us at least a snapshot of what the temperature, the dew point, the pressure was like, the wind, around the country. And so I was looking back at those archives, and it's really a that day was really a pretty classical setup for just a really extreme cold outbreak in the Midwest. We had a cold front that had moved through the day before, maybe the evening before. So when the game kicked off, that front was way to the south, Nashville to Atlanta kind of area. And behind that cold front came some very, very cold, very stable air, basically barreling out of the Arctic. There's a big high pressure system that probably around the kickoff had parked itself over, you know, Duluth or so. And so it was the way that it was that air was rotating around that area, high pressure, it was just streaming down from, like I mentioned, the Arctic. And that's really the only place we can get air that cold as a source region, is when it can sit up there and get cold and cold and cold and cold, and all of a sudden the jet stream breaks in some way that we can get that. It was in a really extremely cold period of time for much of the central U.S., and it just so happened that they were unfortunately playing that game up there in Green Bay.
As such big football fans, what sort of temperatures would prevent you guys going to a game, and what's maybe one of the coldest games that you've attended as a fan?
Yeah, so I actually had to make this decision recently. So at the end of the 2023 season, the Bears and the Bills had a matchup up at Soldier Field, and the tickets were like $7. I couldn't believe it. But then I looked at the weather forecast, and the kickoff temperature was supposed to be 2 above.
People were tailgating, eating, and of course, hydrating.
Cheers!
When you saw the wind chills, the temperatures, that didn't scare you away?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, I did. But I'm ready.
We're here.
But when the Bears and usually down, if I go to a Bears game, I take the train to avoid parking and everything. And I made a decision that was going to be too cold, even though it would have been a great matchup at a great price. You know, you can do that. I mean, you can get the gear. You can obviously spend a lot of attention dressing up with hand warmers, electric stuff, in your boots and everything. But I made that decision that I wasn't going to do it. Call me a bad fan.
How about you, Trent?
Yeah, I think if it's just me, I don't know if there's a threshold that I wouldn't go unless the game would be canceled. I mean, in reality, the NFL wouldn't allow the Ice Bowl to occur today. That would have just been too dangerously cold. But, if it was near zero, I'd probably go. I certainly wouldn't go with my kid. That's another thing, too. Like, I can know when I'm getting too cold to go inside, but I don't think he could. I will say I did go to a game against the Packers.
Along the frozen lakefront of Lake Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, and Soldier Field. And bless these people. They are unbelievably hale and hearty for being here tonight. Temperature in the single digits. It has not been 10 degrees or warmer in the last 48 hours in Chicago since Saturday night.
That was pretty chilly, and then people next to us had their shirts off. Of course, they couldn't feel it for many reasons. So, and I will say a shout out to the Lions are playing at the Bears. I think it's like the game date hasn't been set yet, but it's going to be in that first week of January. So that'll be a really interesting one to see. And you know, if we have temperatures like what we have right now, where it's in the teens and the tickets are cheap, I may head up there. So we'll see.
We'll have to report back.
Yeah.
If If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about climate and weather. We're talking about football games with extreme weather with Steve Nesbitt, head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, and Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist.
All right, so let's turn from cold to odd, maybe, weather, and break down the Fog Bowl of 1988. So on New Year's Eve, 1988, it was a cold Saturday afternoon because it was New Year's Eve in Chicago there at Soldier Field. The game began between the Bears and Eagles with just some minor visibility issues, just some fog, but nothing significant. But during the game, a very thick, dense fog came over the stadium.
Soldier Field in Chicago for the Eagles against the Chicago Bears. This is a game that will go down in history as the Fog Bowl. They'll never forget this one at Soldier Field. Oh, it started out beautifully in Chicago. Nice sunny day.
And this was a divisional playoff game, so it did matter. That's when the Bears were consistently good. And Mike Ditka was still their coach, and he said it was the strangest thing he ever seen. Visibility became so limited that the players couldn't see their coaches or fans, and in some cases they couldn't see one another. Another situation where in today's NFL, because folks are a lot faster and hitting a lot harder, probably would have been canceled or postponed. But nonetheless, Randall Cunningham, who was the Eagles quarterback at the time, threw for 407 yards. He completed half his passes, which is something. Sometimes Caleb has trouble doing that without the fog, but he was intercepted three times, so you know that happens. And the Bears won, which is most important. So this was a situation where for folks watching on TV, and you can see the old footage where, the announcers themselves couldn't see because they sit up in the press box, so you couldn't see what was happening on the game. The announcers didn't know what was happening in the game, and it was just an odd situation.
That's funny. What were they saying?
Well, I actually was watching the game. I think I was 12. But I remember sitting there, and I remember the broadcast switched to sideline cameras because the cameras that they usually use up in the stands couldn't see anything. So they were literally, like, at the field level showing the game pretty close up and just trying to show, like, basically you could see just, like, a scrum of players out there and something was happening, and then the scoreboard would change. And
any possibility of a view from the press box, our normal game coverage, is impossible.
We know we're winning, but who are we playing now? It's impossible to see, even from here. You can't even see the screen on the TV.
Many wanted the game postponed until visibility improved, but the players were able to see about half the field, and officials ruled that was good enough. As long
as I could see. And to me, it was amazing that Randall Cunningham was able to throw the ball. I think the Bears mainly ran the ball. Randall Cunningham was one of my favorite quarterbacks in the 80s. He was amazing. And just remember enjoying the game and just seeing, like, wow, what a strange game that was.
So watching this game, could you, you know, tell what plays they were running, or was the visibility so low that you were just kind of, you know, piecing things together based on the scoreboard?
At times you couldn't see what was actually going on in the play. You just kind of saw motion. It kind of went in and out a little bit, but there were times where you really didn't know what was going on. And what was a referee doing? I mean, I wonder what people got away with during this game.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In sort of interviews later, the players kind of compared it to being in a twilight zone, like kind of really spooky and disorienting. So Trent, what is fog and how does it form?
Yeah, so fog is very, very basically sort of a cloud that forms near the ground. So we get moisture in the air, water in the air that condenses out for one of a number of reasons. And we can get lots of different types of fog. This particular type of fog was a combination of, we can consider advection fog, where the moist or humid but cooler air blowing off of Lake Michigan hits a little bit of a warmer area and condenses out in a very effective way and creates that cloud right near the surface. And, you know, we can't see water vapor when it's in its gas form, but when it condenses out in liquid, we can see it. And that's what the cloud is there. We can also get things like snow melting that can create fog as well. And this was another thing. We had snow on the ground. And then places where they have mountains, not Chicago, but you can get upslope fog where the air is being pushed up the mountain and it begins to cool and therefore condense out some of its moisture as well. So, in this case, it was a combination of melting snow, relatively warm weather that he the couple of days before that had heated the ground, which of course heats faster than the lake surface does, and then that advection off the lake that just really created that thick fog situation.
So Steve, is this difficult to predict, and kind of what determines how quickly that fog will clear?
Yeah, sometimes fog can be a tricky forecast. As you've probably known, you know, the way that fog forms can be sometimes very localized, and especially near the lakeshore, it's really probably a narrow zone that really gets affected. And so it's really hard to forecast. And the ingredient to clear it out is basically you need somehow to dry the air. So either by the sun coming out and trying to warm up the surface a little bit so that that cloud eventually essentially evaporates, or you need to bring air in horizontally through the wind that's drier, or from above, and mixing that down through turbulence to try to reduce the relative humidity so that you're outside of that cloud, essentially. Sometimes that can take a while. And, you know, here in central Illinois, we've had periods where we just kind of had fog sitting around for days, and kind of feels like you're in the fog bowl. So as a Bills fan, one of the big games that we often look forward to is the Battle of Lake Erie, and where the Cleveland Browns come to Buffalo or vice versa. Very similar cities, obviously, similar geography, and neither city is a stranger to snow. And so back in 2022, we had a couple of really big storms that impacted western New York.
The city of Buffalo is digging out after several feet of snow blanketed cars, roads, and homes in what the state's governor has called the, quote, blizzard of the century.
Blizzard conditions. That's like whiteout conditions, crazy wind, tons of snow. 37 straight hours is what they saw in Buffalo. That's the longest blizzard condition situation on record since 1950.
Some of the victims were found in their cars or outside in the cold. Others suffering cardiac events from shoveling or blowing snow.
The snow was so high, the whiteout conditions made it impossible for people to see, made it impossible for first responders to get to emergencies. For a time during this blizzard, there were no emergency services available. If that's not one of the scariest things ever.
So this event was special because it was a very, very long duration lake effect snow event, which is something that, of course, people that grew up near the Great Lakes, either in Ohio or New York, are very familiar with. This one pretty much set up right over the south suburbs of Buffalo, where the Bills Stadium, Highmark Stadium, is located. And it sat there and produced more than 70 inches of snow over a 36-hour period. Now, of course, clearing out the stadium from that much snow just became impossible at that point. And even getting the players from their homes to be able to go somewhere to play the game became very difficult. But fortunately, the NFL was able to actually reschedule the game in Detroit at Ford Field. And the challenge was then to actually get the Bills players from their homes to somewhere where they could fly or take the bus over to Detroit. And so essentially the city went to work. And so basically it was a coordination effort of digging individual players out of their homes. And there were stories of like neighbors going out and shoveling players' driveways so they wouldn't have to shovel all the snow and so they wouldn't have to be tired doing it, playing the game in a few days. And then for people actually transporting people across the city in their trucks so they could essentially get to the airport and fly out to Detroit. Now, incidentally, you know, the Bills ended up winning that game, but Buffalo actually had to play in Detroit that next week. So it was kind of weird that they played in Detroit 2 weeks in a row. So they had a little home away from home out there at Ford Field.
So Trent, remind us how lake effect snow forms. Like, how could you get 70 inches of snow in 36 hours?
Yeah, so you know, when we were talking about the fog bowl, we talked about the difference in temperature between the lake and the land. Most often, especially early in the winter season, that temperature actually is reversed. So when we come out of summer and fall, the lakes cool down slower than the land does. So oftentimes we'll have the Great Lakes at a higher temperature than the land is, and of course much higher than the overlying air. And so when we get storm systems and the kind of predominant air movement from west to east across the Great Lakes, we'll have cold, relatively dry air moving across a lake like Lake Ontario or Lake Michigan, picking up a lot of moisture and energy, and then what is now a relatively warmer and more humid air mass hits that cold land on the other side, and that moisture begins to condense, and we can get a lot of very rapid snowfall accumulation. And to talk about like 70 inches in 36 hours, that's something that really would be very challenging to happen without that effect of the lake. But when you think about the predominant direction from west to east, you know, Stephen mentioned like northeast Ohio, you know, northwest Pennsylvania, western New York are those lake effect snow belts. We do get them here in Illinois, even in central Illinois, but it's a lot more rare and it's not as strong because not only are we on the upwind side of Lake Michigan, but Lake Michigan itself is more of a north-south oriented lake. So the best kind of catch for lake effect snow oftentimes is when you have a east-west oriented lake like Erie or Ontario, where you can have a long time for that air to pick up all that water before it dumps it.
And Steve, what is the snowiest Bills game you can remember, you know, watching or attending?
Yeah, so there's been a lot over the years. And as you know, Bills have had a long history of losing. And there was a period between the 1990s into the late 2010s where they had not made the playoffs. But in 2017, with the arrival of Josh Allen, fortune started to turn. And there was a game in 2017 where the Bills were playing the Colts, where basically the stadium turned into a snow globe.
You see some of the grounds crew here quickly come out with the shovels and the snow blowers to try to get the yard lines a little bit more visible. I mean, this is just a wild scene in Buffalo. It is snowing in our booth. It's incredible from everyone's vantage point.
And players were making snow angels on the field. The fans were basically, you know, setting their drinks down in snowbanks next to themselves in the stands. It was quite the scene, and probably took quite a while to get out of the stadium after the games. But fortunately, the Bills were able to pull out the victory.
What a pleasure it is to welcome all of you back inside the Louisiana Superdome. The last time that
we've talked a lot about football in winter weather, or like weather that occurs in December, but of course the start of the NFL season, and really the first half of the NFL season, occurs during hurricane season as well, in the Atlantic. And we have had several events where games have either been postponed or canceled due to impending hurricanes, or just the fact that a hurricane went through and caused damage to the stadium. But of course, I think the most noteworthy was in 2005, Katrina, you know, ravaged the city of New Orleans and significantly damaged the New Orleans, the Louisiana Superdome, which was, you know, right after the hurricane, also an area of refuge for thousands of people who were stranded. So it not only delayed or postponed games for the Saints, but actually they switched to play all of their home games for the rest of that 2005-2006 season, split between San Antonio and the Alamo Dome and LSU Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. And I just to say that I remember, I think it was the year after, maybe 2007, when with Drew Brees, this was one of his first years as a Saint. He got traded from the Chargers. And, of course, now Drew Brees is if he's not a Hall of Famer, he will be a Hall of Famer. He brought at least one Super Bowl to New Orleans. And I just remember they opened the Superdome up the next year, and he led them to a fantastic victory. And it was it was one of those situations, one of those circumstances where sports really sort of transcends just the game itself. And but definitely a really significant event.
Last time the thousands gathered here, their mission was survival. Well, 56 weeks after Hurricane Katrina, everything's changed about New Orleans. But as thousands gather back in here for the first time since, they gather back in here with the real purpose of why this building, this great building with so many memories, was built 3 decades ago, to enjoy a big-time, good old-fashioned Southern football game with a couple of undefeated teams playing for the league in the NFC South. Quite simply, tonight is the most significant New Orleans Saints game ever.
Trent, kind of, you know, looking to the future of the NFL, will we see more extreme weather games under climate change?
You know, it's a really good question. For winter weather, it really does vary. For southern cities, it's just, when we look at projections, there's not really any indication that we're going to see more intense or frequent winter weather. For those areas like Buffalo that do experience lake effect snow, there's some evidence that we may see at least a continuation of the potential for lake effect snow because of those temperature gradients. Certainly with extreme cold, that's not likely to become more frequent. Heavy rain, severe weather, perhaps, certainly hurricanes. One thing that I will say, though, is that what we're seeing is when especially for the NFL, more and more teams, when they build new stadiums, they're building domed or retractable roof stadiums. Partly for the weather, not really for these really extreme situations, but if you think about the city of Chicago, right now Soldier is open, but they're not really hosting concerts or, you know, Final Four basketball games in Soldier, things like that. And that's something they could do with a dome. So even with more extreme weather games, especially with the effect of winter weather, we'll likely see more and more cities not having to deal with those effects, at least on the game itself, because of propensity for indoor kind of play.
And I will note that the Bills are building a new stadium right now, and it is open because it is a home field advantage for the home team when you have Southern teams coming into the winter. It might mean two or three more wins every year.
Some strategy.
They've talked about Denver. When Denver builds a new stadium, it will also be open because when people look and watch the Broncos games with snow falling, it's a
free advertisement.
It's a free advertisement for skiing.
For skiing, yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you both for joining us, and good luck to your teams the rest of the season.
Go Bills.
Yeah.
Steve Nesbitt is the head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, and Trent Ford is the Illinois State Climatologist. For those just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate. I'm Maddie Stover. Have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle? Pun intended. Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.